All right, you guys. Hey, it's Deb. Welcome to part two of my conversation with Dr. Brooke. Her book is How to Eat to Change How You Drink. I hope this encourages your heart. At the very end of our conversation, we were way out of time, only because it's my own time restrictions. It's not nobody saying like, you have to stop at a certain time. I just like to keep my podcast to about a half hour or so. Anyway, we were way over. But I wanted to ask her about the sleepy time mocktail and about the magnesium. What kind of magnesium is the right magnesium to use in your sleepy time mocktail? Because the first time I made it, I used the wrong kind. So I don't want that to happen to you and have it turn into a colon cleanse mocktail like it did for me. So enjoy part two of my episode with Dr. Brooke, How to Eat to Change How You Drink. I hope you guys love this. And I just, my goal, my whole reason for doing this podcast is for you to be encouraged. The fun isn't over and there are still good things to drink. So lots and lots of love. We'll talk to you soon. Buckle up, friends, and welcome to the Thriving Alcohol-Free Podcast. I'm your host, Deb, otherwise known as Mocktail Mom, a retired wine drinker that finally got sick and tired of spinning on life's broken record called Detox to Retox. Let this podcast be an encouragement to you if alcohol is maybe a form of self-care for you, or you find yourself dragging through the day waiting to pour another glass. I am excited to share with you the fun of discovering new things to drink when you aren't drinking and the joy of waking up each day without a hangover. It is an honor to serve as your sober fun guide. So sit back and relax or keep doing whatever it is you're doing. This show is produced for you with love from the great state of Kentucky. Thanks so much for being here and big time cheers. Okay, so if somebody's thinking, they're just thinking like, because there's that quiet voice, and you do talk about this in the book, that quiet, right? It got louder and louder, like that little like, am I drinking? You know, do I need to stop drinking? I forget exactly how you put it, but we've all had that, right? Like that's how it starts. It's just, am I drinking more than I, you know, should I look at this? It's hard to do.
Yeah. In the book, it's actually like one of the first lines in the introduction. I say that it starts with a whisper. One day you just have this little thought in your back of your head and you're like, maybe I should stop drinking. And then you're like, no.
Ignore that. Yeah. Be quiet. Mm-hmm.
And then it starts getting a little louder. And then it starts to kind of tap you on the shoulder. And then it starts to knock you on the side of the head. Right? And it's like, Okay, when am I going to get this? And this is oftentimes why people do have to hit that rock bottom moment before they make a change, because it's hard to do. It's really, really hard to do, especially because most of us have come in from this place of everyone around us drinks, our partner drinks, our family drinks, all of our friends drink, our coworkers drink. How the heck am I supposed to be the person that makes this change? It can feel really, really overwhelming. But here's the other thing is that exactly like you said, Deb, is it's mindset, right? So can we go into this of the mindset of there is nothing wrong with me? I do not like how this is affecting my life, and I have control in my life, a certain degree, and I can choose to put this down and to seek other ways of supporting myself. Someone was just talking about moderation with me the other day, and I am someone who, you know, I think when I first came into sobriety, probably was like pleading with the devil to be able to moderate.
Same. I just wanted to be able to moderate. That was why I was taking a little break.
Right. Everyone. Well, I mean, the day that I quit drinking, that morning, I said to my partner at the time, I said, I think I'm going to take a little break. I'm going to cut back. Right. Sure enough, ended up getting sober. And I'm so grateful for that. But I think now, if you ask me now, if I could be granted one wish and the wish was to be able to moderate, I wouldn't even want to moderate. Because the life that I have in sobriety today has given me so much more joy.
I agree.
Than any kind of alcohol would provide for me. And it takes, of course, some time to get to that place to be able to like look back and say, you know, I'm okay without it. But the amount of energy and
mental gymnastics.
The tennis match of, should I drink? Should I not drink? Should I have one? Can I have one? Should I have a second? Like, this is exhausting, right? And when you cut that out, when you don't try this, or you walk away from this moderation thing, there is a huge open space in your mind, a huge open space where you can fill with whatever joy you want. And I am a huge believer. There's a conclusion at the back of the book, actually behind the recipes, which some people miss. It's hidden back there.
I know. I love the recipes. Yes. And there's even some mocktail recipes. They're yes. And tonics. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I stand firmly behind today is in my first year of sobriety, I achieved 3 of the huge goals that I had been carrying around with me for years, like writing down on my yearly goals list every year.
Really? Really?
I got a book deal. I wrote a book. I started a business, which had been on my to-do list forever. And I ran a half marathon.
Amazing.
And these were all things that I was like, yeah, one day I'll do this. One day I'll do this. And alcohol was always more important than training for a half marathon. God, I couldn't sacrifice a Saturday night to do race training on a Sunday. Forget it. Actually, on my second day sober, I signed up for my half marathon and I said, well, I'm going to start training, I guess, because this is, we do it big, right? But I say that, I share it because these are all the possibilities. The possibilities are truly endless when you open up all this space in your mind. That it's so hard to put this one thing down, but that one thing opens up about 75 doors in front of you.
You're so right. You're so right. Everything opens up. Everything. There's space for everything. There's time for everything. You're not thinking about doing all those mental tennis matches, right? You know, when am I drinking? All of it. Were you nervous the first time you went out? I know you talked about it a little bit in the book, like, I thought the fun was going to be over. I thought the fun was going to be over. I think many of us come into this like, I'm not going to have fun anymore. So can you share a little bit about like the first time you went out sober with your friends, what that was like?
Well, that story in the book, I was 20 something days sober. And I remember going into this like, let me like buckle up, let me strap in. You know, I could have said no. And my partner at the time was with me and he was super supportive about me not drinking. And he was like, we don't have to go if you don't want to. And I was like, no, I want to. Like, I gotta, you know, challenge myself on this. And it was a Friday night and I was with a couple of my friends from growing up and decided we were going to go to this bar that had this basement with a DJ and all this kind of stuff, right? So my whole thing was, I'm just going to go for a little while. I got to test myself. I have to, you know, see how I do. And I was adamant that I wasn't going to drink. So I wasn't concerned necessarily about that situation. I also told everyone that I wasn't drinking. They all knew that I was trying sobriety. So no one was going to come up to me with a drink and say, here, have this, ordered it for you, anything like that. And that night, I danced with my friends. I had more fun that night than I probably had had in years. And I had this moment of awareness when I was there, dancing and watching my friends. I ordered a club soda with lemon. And I realized that I hadn't had fun out in years, that I would be so worried about saving my spot at the bar, getting the bartender's attention for my next drink. And I would have drank so quickly that I, you know, I wouldn't even be remembering things after the first hour, basically. And I went home that night. I slept well. I woke up the next morning really proud of myself. Yeah. And my friends the next day said to me, you were so fun. Like, we were worried that you weren't going to be as fun because you weren't drinking. And like, you actually danced and you were like, had a good time. And that confirmed for me that like, I could be accepted without alcohol. That like, I didn't have to be drinking to have fun. I didn't have to be drinking to get attention from my friends. I didn't have to be drinking to have a Friday night and have a good time. And it was one of those like monumental moments. That's why I write about it in the book.
It's huge.
Because we all have those experiences early on that leave those marks for us, where we say like, wow, that was like a turning point where I had this moment of awareness that I could do this differently and that I could succeed in this.
Yeah. Yeah. And it gives you the momentum to keep going. You know, like, okay, the next time you go out with friends, like, well, I did it that time. We went out dancing. I was dancing, you know, then definitely I can go to a wedding and not drink. You know, it just kind of gives you that confidence, right? To keep going.
And every next little step gives you that next level of confidence, right? And I always say to clients too, like recently I had a woman who was 120 days sober and she was going to her first concert. And I said, okay, let's think of it this way. How many concerts have you been to where you drank? 10, 20, 50, I don't know.
Yeah.
What if just this one time at this one concert, you didn't drink? Like, what if you just said, I'm going to try it once? Sure enough, she went, she had fun. She said, wow, I did it. And now going into next concert, being able to say, okay, I've already gone to a concert and not drank. I could do this, right? So every single time we have that experience and we just keep building more and more and more off of that. But I always like that trick of how many times have I drank at a wedding? What if this one wedding, I just didn't drink? Just this one time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It doesn't feel overwhelming, right? Like I can't ever drink again at a concert. You know, it doesn't feel as overwhelming to say like just this one, just right now, just focus on right now. It's kind of one day at a time.
I gone to a concert and drank. Like, maybe I should just see what would happen if I didn't drink at this one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Give yourself an opportunity just this one time. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. As you guys know, I love Giessen 0% wines. Their Sauvignon Blanc is my go-to on a regular basis, but they recently launched a delicious sparkling Brut 0%, which is quickly becoming a fan favorite. I am so proud to have Giessen as the exclusive non-alcoholic wine sponsor of the Thriving Alcohol-Free podcast. Giessen 0% wines are created through the magic of advanced spinning cone technology to remove the alcohol from their full-leaded wines. The award-winning winemaker Duncan Schuler and his team have done wonders in Marlborough, New Zealand by creating an entire family of 0% wines with all the flavor and deliciousness you expect from traditional, quote, full-leaded wine. Their non-alcoholic wines maintain the aroma and the body to create a low-calorie wine that never contains more than 0.5 ABV. Globally available, look for Giessen 0% wines wherever you shop for your non-alcoholic options. Their family of alcohol-free wines include the most effervescent member of the family, the Sparkling Brut 0%, which is absolutely delicious for any celebration. My personal favorite, although I do love them all, is the Sauvignon Blanc, coming in at only 100 calories for the entire bottle. And not to be missed, the other members of their 0% family, the Riesling, the Premium Red Blend, the Rosé, the Pinot Gris. With Giessen 0% wines, there's a de-alcoholized wine for everyone and every occasion. Give Giessen a try and let me know how much you love it. And if you want to meet their winemaker, go back to episode 33 of the podcast where Duncan Schuler joined me to share about the Giessen story. Your book is amazing. So everybody just needs to buy your book, okay? How to Eat to Change How You Drink. Everybody needs to buy this. Dr. Brooke, it's on Amazon. Leave a wonderful review. Do you want to chat quickly about the three different, you know, types of drinkers?
Yeah, I would love to. So I created these three drinking archetypes because when I got sober, and as you're hearing my story, and I know so many of you listening probably have a similar story where you were maybe a heavy drinker by the end. I was maybe like a 4, 5, 6 day a week drinker for many years. By the time I quit drinking, I was a daily drinker. So just like you, Deb, that over time snowballed and, you know, at the end really like needed to stop because my life was starting to spiral. But when I started working with others, probably about 6 months after I got sober and I started running some online groups, nutrition-focused sobriety, I had people that came in who drank like I did, but I also had people come in who didn't drink like I did, that maybe only drank on the weekends or a couple times a month, but they still wanted help stopping. And so I'm going, okay, well, this is a different situation than someone who's drinking every single day, but they still are struggling. So my head, again, this is my scientist brain, goes, well, why? Like, why is it that this person struggling in this situation, that person struggling in this situation? And so I created these three drinking archetypes because I wanted to create a way for people to identify that wasn't reliant on you had to be an everyday drinker in order to, like, for these things to apply to you, right? So the three drinking archetypes are the social drinker, the stress drinker, and the habitual drinker. There's also this fourth archetype that I don't talk about too much called the nonchalant drinker. And the nonchalant drinker is the person that blows all of our minds, that goes to dinner, drinks like half a glass of wine, leaves the rest.
Leaves the rest. And you're going, how? What are you doing? I'll finish it for you. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, the mind-blowing.
The nonchalant drinker is someone who could truly take it or leave it, is not necessarily reading this book because they're not looking for support in stopping. But they do exist. They do somehow. They're unicorns.
Yes, I'm married to one. My husband's like accidentally sober. I mean, he could take it or leave it. Yeah.
Amazing. I love that. So the social drinker is that person who's mostly drinking on the weekends, maybe a few times per month. Oftentimes, though, they feel like once they start, they can't stop. that maybe they want to just have one drink, but they get into that social environment and they kind of get carried away. So this is someone who is, again, unlikely to pursue full sobriety because they don't identify with this AA lifestyle of having to go sober and, you know, be strict and all of that. The stress drinker is someone who, just like it sounds, is drinking mostly for stress situations. So they are more triggered, less by social, maybe a little bit by social, but they're someone who's picking it up more because they're hyper-stressed. The end of a long work day, they are, you know, maybe stressful situations at home, and they're picking it up because of this. This is also like kind of that mommy wine culture too, right? Like high stress, mom, working, taking care of kids, taking care of husband maybe. And yep. So using it for that. And then the third is the habitual drinker. And this is someone who is more in alignment with that maybe daily drinking or almost daily drinking, really have more of that chemical dependency on it. And what oftentimes happens is people are maybe starting as social drinkers, starting to pick up a little bit more. It's becoming that stress drinker and then eventually turning into that snowball, that habitual drinker. So it is, you could be moving through these at any given time.
Yep. And it happens so slowly to go from one to the next. You don't even realize it. Next thing you know,
you don't realize it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So interesting. And you developed the term functional sobriety. Is that right?
Yeah. So functional sobriety is the approach that I developed in the research of this work. That is, it's really a nutrition and functional medicine kind of root cause approach to how we cut back or quit drinking. And we look at these different areas like the gut, like our hormones, like blood sugar. And it's really how do we support the body in a way that can make it easier for us to quit, but also support us in staying stopped. And then lastly, healing. Right? Because alcohol is really disruptive to all these areas of the body. So how do we heal these systems so that we feel good and we don't want to then drink and we aren't looking for that escape hatch?
It's fantastic. Yeah. I'm so happy to meet you. I can't even tell you just personally how I know your book is just going to be life-changing for me. Truly, because I feel like, okay, I've got that one piece down, you know, and it's like, okay. And then like you were saying, like, you know, you had those goals and I'm getting emotional, but you know, I have these goals in my head of like, you know, not that I have to be back in my cheerleading outfit from high school. I don't have to be that, but like, I just don't feel good and I want to feel good. And like you said, like I have control, obviously I don't have control that I got breast cancer, you know, but I do have control over getting to the gym and, you know, walking and taking care of myself. We have control over certain things in our lives. So thank you for empowering, you know, me personally and just so many thousands of people, mm-hmm. Women, especially with your book. So your knowledge.
Thank you so much, Deb. And you know, this is one of those things that really provides a positive light for us to focus on. You know, a lot of times when we're going through this process, and it's not all or nothing. Like I do get this feedback sometimes like, well, I should just be focused on quitting. I shouldn't be bringing in like diets and, you know, all these things to just like substitute. And it's not about that, right? It's about taking this approach of this is how we can refocus our energy to actually healing our body from what we've experienced and what we've done maybe to our systems from this alcohol use. And it's really a positive place to focus our energy. You know, we open up all this space in our mind. We open up maybe this new time in our evenings or our afternoons that maybe we can spend trying a recipe, trying some mocktails, but maybe cooking a healthy dinner, maybe going for a walk or taking an exercise class instead. And so it's really just an opportunity for us to look at this in a new way. And all of our journeys are unique with health and wellness, just like with sobriety. And so it's okay if you're not where you want to be quite yet, but just knowing that this is like a path here that's available for you to help you feel good and to help you kind of achieve those goals of how you want to feel.
To feel. Yeah. So encouraging. So encouraging. I'm like hesitant to ask you. I just want to ask you one last question.
Yes.
Super quick. Okay. Cause this is the crazy thing. I made a sleepy time mocktail drink and accidentally I didn't know the difference between magnesium. The bottle said calm. And I was like, well, this will work. And I put it with my tart cherry juice and I made it. And then I didn't sleep at all because I was running to the toilet all evening. It was awful. So there's the colon cleanse sleepy girl mocktail. And there's the, you know, go to sleep, sleepy cow. Can you tell us the difference of magnesium? This is the last thing and then we'll go. Okay. I just love you.
Yes. Yeah. So magnesium is a very important mineral for, and actually it's deficient in about 70% of the US population. It is depleted when we drink alcohol. So there's a good chance you're probably deficient. Many of us are deficient. But magnesium is actually the body's relaxing mineral. So let's think about it this way. If we're looking to relax or de-stress, what do we need? We need something like magnesium. If we're deficient, though, we're going to be seeking other forms of relaxation, like maybe alcohol. So this is why magnesium in particular is really important to replenish in our sobriety journey. But there are different forms of magnesium, and magnesium can be a tricky one to navigate. So magnesium citrate, which is probably what's in that one that you took.
Yes,
magnesium citrate is what they use in high doses to prep for a colonoscopy. So when we take too much of it, it's going to cause evacuation. This can be good in small amounts in people who are constipated. So for anyone who's constipated, a little bit of magnesium citrate is actually good for moving things along. But if you're looking for magnesium to help support with relaxation, muscle relaxation, sleep, we want to look at magnesium glycinate. So that is the difference there. Important difference, because as you mentioned, could kind of send you to a different path for that evening.
Yes. I just want to encourage all the listeners to read the labels. Read which kind of magnesium you are purchasing. Yes, I'm not such a good label reader.
That's okay. This is why this stuff is so tricky though, right?
Yeah, like, it's true.
Support of someone maybe who knows a little bit more about it too.
Yes, this is why we need Dr. Brooke. Okay, everybody go grab your book, How to Eat to Change How You Drink. Make sure you are following Dr. Brooke on Instagram, all the places. Thank you, thank you, thank you for your time. Thank you for being here. I am such a fan and just so thrilled to have met you just screen to screen here today. So thank you for your time.
Yeah, so nice to meet you, Deb. Thanks for having me. And I hope everyone takes a little tip away from today that they can implement.
100%. Big time cheers to you for tuning in to the Thriving Alcohol-Free Podcast. I hope you will take something from today's episode and make one small change that will help you to thrive and have fun in life without alcohol. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social, send up a flare, or leave a rating and a review. I am cheering for you as you discover the world of non-alcoholic drinks and as you journey towards authentic freedom. See you in the next episode.